Welcome back, guys. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Henrik. You're listening to Red Ice Radio. So the war on science is continuing, obviously. The overtaking of science so that they can use it in their war against us, against our culture, against our civilization, against our people, against our values. You know what's happening. So today we're going to talk specifically about one of these cases, Cordelia Fine and her book Testosterone Rex, that recently actually won the Royal Society Prize. I think it's actually for the science book of the year 2017. And we have with us on the show Roderick Kane. He's actually back on the show. He's from atavisionary.com, and he's, of course, the author of Smart and Sexy. We spoke about the book last time he was with us. Welcome back, Roderick. Thank you for coming on again.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Awesome. So let's just dive into the subject. I wanted to bring you on, and it was Reinhardt that proposed it as well, because I saw it in passing initially. Cordelia Fine wrote a book recently, Testosterone Rex. She is behind these other books and lectures that she's done, the delusions of gender. She's done presentations on sex and testosterone and, you know, financial risk-taking, and basically pushing very straight-up kind of, you know, feminist values, basically. But let me just play a clip first to kind of get people in the headspace, and then we can begin to talk more specifically about her book. But here's a short clip, introducing her recent book earlier in the year.
I'm Cordelia Fine, the author of Testosterone Rex, Unmaking the Myths of Our Gendered Minds, and this is the Testosterone Rex View. That familiar, pervasive, and powerful story of sex and society. Weaving together interlinked claims about evolution, brains, hormones, and behavior, it offers a neat and compelling account of our society's persistent and seemingly intractable sex inequalities. Denying testosterone Rex can seem tantamount to denying biology and evolution. But dig a little deeper into the science, and you'll find that rejecting the testosterone Rex view doesn't require denial of evolution, of biology, or difference at all. In the evolution of the science of sex, which has seen important advances in evolutionary biology, neuro and behavioral science, endocrinology, and philosophy of biology, testosterone Rex has become extinct. It misrepresents our past, present, and future. It misdirects scientific research, and it reinforces an unequal status quo. It's time to say goodbye and move on.
All right. Philosophy of biology. That's where you kind of have to go, I guess, to start figuring some of this stuff out, right? Because it's very, it seems at a glance, Roderick, that this is built on pretty shady assumptions, to be honest. But what did you find as you start digging into her work?
Well, the first thing I did is look her up to see kind of who she is. And I don't know, I went to her Wikipedia page. And she's part of this called Neurogenderings Network. I copied it out here. I'll read it to you. The Neurogenderings Network is a transdisciplinary network of neurofeminist scholars. Oh, my God. Who aim to critically examine neuroscientific knowledge production to develop differentiated approaches to a more gender-adequate neuroscientific research. The first thing to understand is that she is a hardcore feminist. And her anything that she's going to write is going to be extremely politically biased. And, you know.
But it's science, Roderick. It's science.
Science. Well, and this is my. Okay, so she's talking about the testosterone Rex view, right? And it's dead. Well, the problem with the testosterone Rex view is it was never alive in the first place. It's a complete straw man. In the beginning, you know, I think two of the main points she does, men aren't really that much risk, you know, risk taking than women.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or vice versa. And I don't know. I don't look at the risk taking too much. I think there is something to do, especially with physically, men are more risk taking. Maybe women are risk taking in social settings, you know, in that kind of thing. That beef is mainly between her and economists. So the economists apparently put out a lot of papers about risk aversion or something like that, and risk taking, and they're kind of going off about why more men are in finance. And to be fair, I think they're all wrong. Like, I think Cordelia Fine is maybe actually correct about the risk taking not being important, but that's only because it has more to do with IQ than risk taking. The economists are wrong because they're not talking about IQ differences. So they're kind of, you know, barking up the wrong tree. So it's kind of like they're all wrong as far as the social sciences go. But I want to backtrack a little bit to the beginning of the book, where she's criticizing this. You know, she starts in the beginning of the book is more of a criticism against evolutionary psychology, whereas the end she flips over to economics and finance research. And what I would say about her book, if I, you know, she talks about the testosterone Rex view being dead. And the problem with that is the testosterone Rex view was never really alive to begin with. It's a complete straw man. Basically, in terms of, you know, motivation in sex and reproduction, men have the desire to bed as many women as possible, as often as possible, to father as many children as possible, whereas women don't want to have sex because of the high risk. Well, that's only part of the story, right? And so she's right that that's not the whole of the story. But the problem is nobody who with any relevancy has thought that for years. Right. I've talked about it myself before. I haven't heard of Cordelia Fine that, you know, men and women both have dual mating strategies.
Mm-hmm, right.
Men have the Madonna whore strategy, which I do go over briefly in my book. And women have an alpha beta strategy. Right. And so we're not, you know, and evolutionary psychologists have known about this for a long time. They developed all these theories back in the 80s. And there's a book that came out, and it's a very good book, by the way, The Moral Animal, Why We Are the Way We Are by Robert Wright. It's a great book. It's evolutionary psychology. And he was talking about these dualistic strategies way back in the early 90s. That's when that book came out in like 93 or 94. So this testosterone Rex view and this attack on evolutionary psychologists has not been a view for like 30 years, 20 to 30 years. So her whole book is a straw man.
Why does she need to attack the straw man? Because this is where we get into politics, right? And feminism, that it's always an ulterior motive these days, right? They try to cherry pick a certain section of, let's say, those they want to criticize or the view that they want to attack. And they make it easy for themselves to basically create this, as you say, a straw man, a monster, something, a weird deformity that they can attack and say, see, that's why my perspective is much more reasonable. Is that what it's about, do you think?
Right. Well, if she actually gave a fair hearing to what the evolutionary psychologists were actually saying and actually believe, then she'd have nothing to write about. But my impression from the book is that there's two groups of academics she doesn't like. One is finance and economics, and one is evolutionary psychology. And so her whole first half of the book is at the evolutionary psychologist. But you know, like the red pill, for example, the red pill manosphere community, they know all about the dualistic strategies, the alpha beta dichotomy, the Madonna whore dichotomy. They know all about that. So like, I'm trying to think who she's trying to refresh their view.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it couldn't be those guys, not that they'd ever read her book anyway, but it couldn't be those guys because they don't believe that. So it can't be really the academics themselves, unless she's really that dense and has never actually bothered to read what, you know, any of those evolutionary psychology papers on the subject.
Isn't it for the masses? That's why she got the prize, right? To get it out to the mainstream, so to speak, the popular science, right?
Yeah, popular science. It is supposed to be to the lay people, but as far as the men who might hold this testosterone Rex view, they don't. I would guess that she just, you know, feminists don't know anything about it. Like, they don't know to know that it's wrong. You know what I mean? Or that she's doing that. So I would assume maybe it's just that and she can make money off of it. But I mean, I honestly... I read another review at West Hunter as part of that, and what he said, and I think I might actually agree with this, is that she might literally just be not that smart and not actually realize that it's a straw man. Like, it may be malicious and intentionally misleading, but I wouldn't throw it past for just not being smart enough to understand what the evolutionary psychologists are actually saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, she does. She's part of the faculty at the Melbourne business school. Yeah, so that's obviously why she does the financial angle. I remember watching one of her presentations. You know, she had this, which seemed like a contradiction to me, because first she put out this idea that, you know, high risk taking among males led to the financial collapse in 2000, you know, it was 8, 9, etc., and previous ones as well, because they're basically, you know, it has been found out
which
that some
is
of them
stupid.
Were right, of course, but it's like, you know, she tries to argue that point that, well, you know, they had a lot of, some of them were taking extra testosterone, they were taking all these risks, they're like basically gambling with everyone's money.
She was making that argument?
Yes, and so later she says, so it would be better if women were in there.
She must have changed her mind then.
Yeah.
She must have changed her mind then, because she argues against that, actually.
Interesting. This was an older lecture, actually, I was watching.
Well, then she must have changed her mind, because in the book, she strongly argues that, well, she tries to argue that men and women have pretty much the exact same risk-taking preferences.
Well, no, exactly. And this was what I was getting to, that it was a contradiction within her very argument. The first she says there isn't difference between them, but the difference between men and females was that, you know, men caused a financial crash, right? Even within the presentation itself, there was a contradiction of an argument.
Well, first, let's talk about what actually was the main cause of the financial crash, because it had very little or nothing to do with anybody's risk-taking preferences. The main cause, so it was, you know, a housing bubble, right? And it was these subprime loans, okay?
That's right.
Well, way back since, you know, the Clintons, they started pushing for an increase in minority home ownership, right? And you know, there's big government policies to do that. Well, the banks originally weren't making loans to these really high-risk groups, and you know, it led to something called disparate impact, which the left has been fighting for a long time. Well, eventually, the government started suing banks if they had a disparate impact in the amount of loans they were giving to various races. All right, so they specifically, if anything. The government changed the risk assessment so that not giving the risky loans was more risky, because if you didn't give the loans, you were going to get sued and lose millions of dollars and get terrible PR. So they started giving the loans. So that was the stick side of it. On the carrot side, they started buying up all these loans at Freddie and Fannie Mac. So the point is, they gave out a lot of crappy loans that they really shouldn't have given out, and the government was specifically encouraging it.
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with risk-taking behavior. Well, I won't say it had nothing to do with it, but the fundamentals of it, rather than, you know, risk-taking behavior of individual finance people, you know, that had very little to do with it compared to the structural pattern the government had set up. So she doesn't mention that. She does at least say risk-taking probably wasn't doing it for reasons that – or, well, she says, okay, women having more women in there wouldn't help, because I don't think women have different risk-taking, which I guess at least is consistent with the feminist attitude, right? It's at least consistent there. And for reasons that are completely unrelated to each other, we do agree on that.
Exactly. That's just it.
Which is funny, because it's happened a number of times. Now, I actually agree with her that the focus of economists on risk-taking is a red herring. I actually agree with that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the reason I agree with that is because we know why men are more high achieving than women, right? Well, you know, you make all these arguments for more men in finance, but does that explain more men in physics or computer programming?
Right.
Or any number of other occupations which don't really have nearly as much to do with risk taking? Well, no, they don't. So risk-taking looks plausible when you're only considering finance, but it doesn't look plausible when you're considering everything together. The only thing that explains the finance and all the other occupations is IQ differences, which I might note she did not mention once at all. In fact, she didn't even mention intelligence or IQ at all in her book, even to dismiss it. it's you can kind of see the feminist and leftist assumption there that they feel that it's so
so irrelevant, right? That it don't
so irrelevant, yeah, even though that's pretty much the only branch of psychology that has any, you know, much credibility.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's been going on for 100 years. It can clearly be tied to social outcomes. It's the single most reliable social science research that's been done is on intelligence and IQ. It's the most thorough, has the longest history, and is the most consistent results, is the most replicable. So the point is, she actually does point out all these economists are writing all these dumb articles about risk-taking. And don't get me wrong, I do think men are more risk, you know, unlike Cordelia Fine, I do think men do take more risks, right? And for the reasons that she poorly elaborated that evolutionary psychologists talk about. But the point is, she sort of described some of these research studies that these social sciences scientists were doing. And both the ones she used to support her case and the ones she was criticizing with the economists were just sounded ridiculous to me. Like she cited to support her cause, she cited a bunch of these like self-report data, you know, where someone, you know, you ask them some questions and they give you an answer. And it's like, well, it's kind of risky to just trust that people are going to be able to act, you know, first they're going to be honest with you. Then they're going to be able to accurately explain what they think and why they think that, you know, that they're rational and analytical enough that they've actually done the work it takes to know. But then she goes and, you know, and she takes that and doesn't criticize it at all. Then she goes to these economists, which I agree, you know, the way they measure risk taking is sort of silly. It's like playing like lottery based games with, you know, small amounts of money or fictional money or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just silly. I mean, if you think about risk taking as an evolved trait, risk taking in and of itself by itself would not be something that would be selected for. The only type of risk-taking that would be selected for is intelligent risk-taking, that you take a risk which, through your own mastery or of the mechanisms or the field involved, you develop mastery, and then you can take what appears to be a high-risk gamble to people who don't have the mastery. So there's a certain perception about what is risk and what's not risk.
Right.
In some of these things. And men are able to develop that mastery better than women. So, I mean, and I discuss this in the book. It's one because of the IQ, but then testosterone actually does alter male, you know, the way they think towards a sort of visuospatial, systematic way of thinking, which is helpful for mastering systems and thus being able to predict how they're going to go. If you can predict how it's going to go, then it's not really a risk, right?
Right.
So these economists are doing these lottery tasks that are just, there's no opportunity to develop mastery, and they're sort of trivial, whatever happens anyway.
Let me read you the motivation here from the Royal Society website. It says, Cordelia Fine's explosive study of gender politics, Testosterone Rex, Unmaking the Myths of Our Gendered Minds, has won the 30th Anniversary Royal Society Insight Investment Science Book Prize. Judges praised Fine's book, powerful book, for its eye-opening forensic look at gender stereotype and its urgent call for change. Chair of this year's panel, paleontologist and award-winning writer and television presenter, Professor Richard Forty, said, quote, a cracking critique of the men are from Mars, women are from Venus hypothesis. Cordelia Fine takes to pieces much of the science of which fundamental gender differences are predicated. Graced with preciously focused humor, the author makes a good case that men and women are far more alike than many would claim. Feminist? Possibly. Humanist? Certainly. A compelling, good read. And she got a good chunk of money out of this too, Roderick, didn't she?
Yeah, I think it was £25,000, which translates about $33,500, something like that.
Nice.
Yeah. If only real science books could get those kind of prizes.
Yeah, exactly. They could do something. What is it? I mean, obviously, they drop it themselves there at the end. Feminist, possibly. Humanist, certainly. It's this didactic issues again, right? Everything is political. Everything is a message. It's always a call for change. It's not just observational like science anymore, where it's like, okay, let's learn about what is it, what drives things, how does it, you know, work and tick and all that stuff. It's always like a motivational to get things to transform within our society. And that's why I think she has been given it. It shows that these scientific institutions like the Royal Society have become, as always, predictably political tools.
Yeah, I mean, the whole book is political. It's political first, and it's science second. I mean, you know, one of her major studies that she does, where she says it's by this guy. She awkwardly refers to all the scientists like casually by their first names in her book, which I always found quite strange. But there's this one study she cites a lot about sort of the personality metrics. You know, some personality metrics tend masculine, some personality metrics tend feminine, but you know, on these 30 different measures or however many there were, you know, every man is going to have some where he's more feminine, every woman's going to have one where he's more masculine, some crap like that. You know, there were four different studies that came out criticizing this original study, which she bases a lot of her support on. And there's four different responses published to it saying, yeah, this is kind of bad. This is kind of crap. And so it's on there. I could probably give you a link to it. So she doesn't mention that or talk about the criticisms of the study. She has this really bad habit of, like, if there's any contradictory data or, like, important factors that might not go to her point, she puts it in the back of the book, in the end notes, so that, like, unless you're going to every single site, and I got the Kindle version, so it was actually kind of convenient to click on it, go back there, look at it. So there's a lot of stuff that doesn't fit into her argument that she does include, but she doesn't include it in the text of the book itself. She includes it at the very end, where most people probably aren't ever going to see it, and that's one of those things. There's another study. Well, before we go into that, there's another study. Remind me to go back to it about compensation.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's a part of her book, and you know, she got this award, but in her book, when she's criticizing the risk taking, she says, "Oh, you know, women are going to take risks too." She actually pats herself on the back and she says, yeah, risks like publishing a feminist science book and getting backlash to it.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, first of all, 98% of your colleagues are far left liberal. I mean, this is well documented in all these social sciences, with the exception of some of the economics and finance, and then they're kind of like, the best you can say for them is they're kind of cucky conservative.
Yeah.
But most of all these social scientists that she's working with and all her peers are far left liberal feminists. So she has absolutely no risk of that. She has no risk of losing her job. If you look at the back of her book, she gives thanks to all these different organizations, which I assume were giving her grant money while she's writing the book. You know what I mean? Like, yep. There, you know, she talks about the Melbourne School, this foundation for this, and blah, blah, blah. And my assumption is that most of those organizations gave her grants to write this book.
Yeah.
And then you consider the fact that she actually won this highly politicized bias prize and won $33,000,
you know, exactly. $33,000
just for writing a shitty book that doesn't even that excludes and doesn't even cover half of the things that it should cover that she's trying to critique.
Yep.
And she's taking a risk. She has the odd, like, I don't know if she's just that dumb.
They always want to play the victim. This is the thing. It doesn't matter. They can, like, have the whole establishment behind them. They can get prizes and awards, and they still think that they're brave and doing something which is just so edgy and so, you know, scary to the establishment. They're delusional.
Well, you know what's a risk? You know, I read the other day, you know, people who, sorry, if I say you know too much, please remind me not to. If you're working on something that isn't part of the progressive narrative, and you're a professor, like Arthur Jensen, he was a big IQ researcher. I mean, he had students try to attack him, right? Then we read, you know, the other day there was an article about this, and this guy was probably a left liberal anyway, but he studied transgender nonsense. And he had a, you know, he had a conversation with one of these surgeons, and the surgeon said, "Oh yeah, there's been a big uptick in reversals lately," and so he decided to study it. And you know, originally got the grant to do it, but once it was showing that, you know, tons of these transgender people are regretting their decisions and getting reversal surgeries, the university cut his funding. You know, that's risk.
Yeah.
You know, getting a student who might attack you—that's risk, right?
Yep.
Potentially losing your, she's not going to lose her job. Her job was never at risk. Nothing about her financial well-being was ever at risk from writing this book. That she actually can go on there and with a straight face say she was taking a risk is obnoxious and yeah. completely untrue.
That's interesting too about the reversals. I didn't know that. That would mean that those people's ability to reproduce is obviously completely, they're damaged the first time around. They do a transition, as they call it. Yeah.
Pretty, you know, usually as soon as they start doing those hormone treatments, it's not too long after that they're sterilized, even yeah. before they get the cuts.
Jeez.
And especially bad for children.
And I heard they're pushing it as low as 3 years old in San Francisco now, by the way. Can you believe that?
I mean, I do.
What can you, I mean, we don't have to derail into this, but it is an interesting thing about all these gender studies and everything, because I don't know if it's just societal and the pressure and all that kind of stuff, or if there is something, I brought this up last time with you, I think, you know, this idea that there is a higher, we're subjected to more chemicals today than we were in the past. Our lifestyle is different. So, you know, these hormones, which, you know, in the past would have been like testosterone when you're out and about and you're hunting and you're fighting and all these things, that would have been much higher than they are today when you have these, you know, soft men sitting in front of the computer all the time. So I believe that there is a kind of an artificial, due to our lifestyle and all those things, equalization between the genders, but if we would return to normal, so to speak, or the way that we were evolutionary designed to function and work and operate, those differences wouldn't be as prominent. But do you think that, is there something to this idea that it's more prevalent today of genders beginning to kind of equalize to a certain extent, and that there is more so-called, you know, transgendered or trans people who want to transition? Is there something to that?
I believe there's always been sort of genetic mistakes, and where people, you know, they just don't develop correctly, and it leads to odd behavior. I do not believe there is any greater increase in the number of transgenders. I think it's purely a propaganda-style push by these progressives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hate to say it, but it's like, I try to be really civil about it, but it always makes me think that day of the rope sounds real nice. Every time I hear about a 3-year-old being encouraged to do transgenderism,
yeah,
the day of the rope sounds real nice to me. I hate to say it, but I mean, it's infuriating. It's child abuse.
Of course.
I can't stand it. I cannot stand it, right? And not these children are vulnerable. They don't know. They can't know. They have to trust the adults that are around them. And when these people are that delusional, they are harming kids. And I just find that intolerable. Intolerable.
Yeah, it's amazing. The Bay Area, they were talking about it here just a couple of weeks ago now. Forget the guy's name. There was someone who was pushing it, and he saw it as malpractice, not offering these 3-year-olds the ability to take hormones and then eventually go into surgery. You know, and the how these people still have their medical licenses, I don't know. It was a big upheaval because teachers had been teaching the kids at this one school that basically, well, you know, you could wake up as a, you know, if speaking to the boys, always to the boys, of course, but it's like, you can wake up and be a girl any day, right? You can just, it can just happen, you know? So boys, you know, came home to their parents and they were crying and they were all upset. They were scared about this, right? So there was an upheaval at this one school, and the parents started turning on the teachers and was a whole split. But this is the, you know, the norm now, so to speak. They are pushing that anything can happen. You can change gender, and there will be the medical establishment and everyone behind you making sure that you can initiate hormones, and then we will help you surgically. And again, as young as 3 years old. I don't know what's wrong with a society like that, but it's something needs to crash and burn, you know?
Yeah, I don't really know how this got to be a thing. It's hard for me to really put my mind in these, you know, try to think about how these people are actually thinking.
Like, yeah.
It's such a rejection of reality and of nature. And I mean, they're rejecting everything. You know, if you go back to the Bible or any one of these old religions, you know, they're rejecting that. They're rejecting evolution. They're rejecting science and biology. It's like, what aren't they rejecting?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just so, it's nuts. It's like, no matter how you splice it,
yep.
I don't know.
I know.
It's completely insane.
Hey, you're mentioning a study about compensation. Talk about that.
Ah, right. So one of the things that she cites this paper, and it's about basically if there's a sexual dimorphism in the brain or elsewhere, say, you know, resting testosterone levels are different in men and women, then they're, you know, maybe that's causing some sort of change, but some of the other changes that are happening elsewhere might be actually to counterbalance that effect. So I don't know if that makes sense. Essentially, it makes sense to, you know, if I explain that correctly. Basically, you know, if your right side of the, this is not a real example. I'm just going to say this to sort of make sense. If your right brain side of your brain grows bigger because of some hormonal difference, then it might compensate for that by making the left side of the brain smaller. All right. Mm-hmm. And her argument is that this is actually a compensatory mechanism so that it works the same, that these various differences are just kind of like canceling out to a net zero effect, where there are structural differences, which she sort of begrudgingly admits,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't actually go over some of the more important ones. But the only reason those exist, or the main reason those exist, is to make sure that everything is actually working the same. So this change here is to counterbalance this change over here. And so she cites this paper, and she cites it again and again. But if you actually go and read the paper, he was saying, you know, the guy was saying, okay, I think this might happen sometimes. And he made a persuasive argument that sometimes that can happen. But he wasn't denying that the differences exist, or that, you know, they're real, and some of them really are translating into real behavioral differences. That's not what he was saying. He was saying, well, we know this is true, but hey, maybe this is also true as well sometimes. Whereas she was taking it, this second part is like, oh, well, this is wiping out what we already have known for a long time. And that's not what he was saying. It was, in my opinion, a misrepresentation of the paper. And you know, she's very selective. You know, I didn't have time to go through every single thing she cited, but that one in particular, that's a pretty strong argument to make. And when I actually went and read the paper itself, like, I'd be kind of irritated if I was that guy.
Yeah, of course.
Because I didn't feel that it accurately I mean, he had a very nuanced, interesting thing that he was talking about, and I think, you know, that guy who wrote that paper, you know, he has a good point, and he made a good point, I thought. But she just kind of ignores the parts that didn't help her argument and overemphasize the parts that do help her argument, when he was trying to think of all these other things that we've already discovered and we know are different or true, but let's think that maybe sometimes this is happening as well. So, I mean, that's the kind of explanation of these papers that she gives.
Interesting. Yeah. So she cherry picks, she, as you say, emphasizes certain portions because it benefits her argument, and then denies other. And it's very easy these days to kind of just build and construct a version that you want to. I mean, I think many of these people, they literally sit down and, as you say, she is a feminist first, right? She sits down and says, this is what I believe, or this is the thesis, this is the position that's right, rather. And all I have to do now is to go out and find the science that supports my position. That's how I think this woman operates.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wrote a whole book on the gender differences in intelligence and cognition. So, yeah, it kind of does work that way. but, you know, one of the things, when she first mentioned the men are from Mars and the women are from Venus hypothesis, quote unquote, that's like just, I laughed the first time I read that. And then I read a little bit further and it's like, oh, you're actually serious. Like, this is just like some, I don't know, it's just some cultural idiom or saying or whatever. It's just a joke. This is not a scientific hypothesis. Not a single one of the several hundred papers that I study was it ever mentioned men are from Mars, women are from Venus. This is not a thing that actual scientists believe. I mean, this is the kind of thing that people like sort of joke around when they're having a few beers at a party. They're always so concerned about these like little social things, like, can you say this? Can you say that? Like the whole end of her book, the last chapter of her book, she's like complaining about, oh, gender toys. I really hate that they're gender toys. You know, there are boy toys and girl toys, and she literally wants to go in and get. She cited an article by Christina Hoff Sommers, Christina Hoff Sommers is I actually respect Christina Hoff Sommers, to be honest. But she basically says in Sweden, there's this one school where they had the teachers go in, and if the child was playing with a gendered toy that was their gender, they'd come and like sort of hover over them and like make them not play with that toy. Like if it was a boy playing with a train, she'd be like, no, play with this doll. Or if it was a girl playing with a doll, like, no, play with this train.
Was this the gender neutral preschool or something like that? Was that the one?
Yeah, it was like in Sweden or Norway. I'm pretty sure it's Sweden. It's probably Sweden.
Yeah.
You're from Sweden, right?
That is correct.
God help you, sir.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it's falling apart, man, so it'll be good.
Yeah, well, the U.S. isn't much better.
No, it's not.
Well, she's talking about this, and they were literally micromanaging five-year-olds' playtime to make sure they weren't playing. I mean, these people are insane. They want to micromanage every single aspect of your life,
absolutely.
Of children's lives, of five-year-olds.
Yep, absolutely.
They want to go and tell the five-year-old, oh, no, you can't play with that. You have to play with this. Like, the amount of control they want to exert over other people, like, even though, you know, I know genders are different, and you know, this is a reality that we have to, you know, accept. But if I was sitting here and I saw a boy and he picked up a stuffed animal or a doll or something, was playing with it, like, you know, a five-year-old or something, I would be like, oh, well. And it wouldn't even cross my mind to be concerned to interfere with whatever little playing that they happen to be doing. Same goes if it was a girl playing with a train. You know, it would never even occur to me to want to care about this. And she's advocating that that basically people, you know, none of the marketing executives should be making money by getting the, you know, products that people actually want. They need to have this gender neutral stuff. And, you know, based on the way she was criticizing that Christina Hoff Sommers paper, she apparently is in support of teachers or other leftist insane people going in and micromanaging every. I mean, and it's not limited to, I mean, it's kids' choice, but this is literally how these people think.
Yeah.
They would love nothing better than to come into your house and point out all the things that you're doing, that you have on the wall, that you might have to watch or read, that they don't think is progressive enough. I mean, this is what I think they would eventually want to do. Now, 10 years ago, I might not have thought that. It's like, there's no way people could be that crazy. But after seeing the last 2 years and how just insane and overbearing and micromanaging these people are.
Yeah.
And like a book that advocates micromanaging of children's toys can win a prize like this in a science book award. That's another crazy thing. And so these people are insane. And I think it's enough. Enough is enough. We cannot accept their craziness anymore.
No.
You know, I mean, we need to just tell them to go fuck themselves.
That's right. Yeah. These people will never give up. You know, we shouldn't have given them an inch to begin with, but you know, they've taken over everything and they will take over everything. They're pushing their way on everything. And as you say, they will never settle for something. It's complete and total control of every aspect of life. As you say, I mean, I remember that preschool. They were like, they claim that it's about, you know, oh, well, if a boy wants to dress up as a girl, we allow them to do that. But that's not what they do. They have to reverse every role. And that's what they think is equality, right? So dress the women or the girls, you know, in blue shades, and then the boys in pink, and then we'll reverse all the toys. And that's their solution to the issue, right? I mean, I don't know what it is that's driving these people, but they're obviously... They're crazy. That they're feminist. They hate men. They want to try to destroy boys at an early age so that there will be no masculinity in the world anymore. I don't know what they're thinking, but they're obviously these playgrounds that these kids are on. They're not playgrounds. They see them as battlegrounds. That's my point.
Yeah, you can't just let children play however they want to. You got to micromanage it. But you know what? The thing is. Is anytime, you know, they'll complain about one thing, and as soon as they get it, and they get the way they want on it, they're just going to think of a brand new thing to bitch about.
Of course.
It's a never-ending bitch cycle. Bitch, 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 bitch. As soon as they're done bitching about one thing, they're going to move right on to the next. You know, what's the next thing that's a problem? You know? It's like, guess what, guys? Let people just do what they want without – they don't need your opinion, and they don't need your influence. Let them live their life.
I mean, wasn't there like Christian sects and stuff in the past that were kind of like, I believe this is primarily the Gnostic sects, but they had this kind of very anti-nature kind of attitudes. They were basically like the world was of the devil and everything in it was evil. And, you know, you shouldn't give in to the, you know, the pleasures of the body and these kinds of things. This cult, which is what it is reminding me of those things that they see nature and everything that's natural within it, the natural order that has arisen with the sexes and everything as a massive problem. And it's their task to basically reverse all of this. And as you say, manage it, engineer it. And if that means changing the very structure, the going to the genes and the biology of these things to, like, you know, permanently reverse and transform it as they see fit, they will do that. They will. I mean, I think this is a any means necessary kind of a cult, basically.
Well, one of the interesting things that I found that she said in there towards the end of the book, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something to the effect of, you know, it's only right that women have access to the same amount of power, prestige, and money that men do. And I don't know. I have an opinion that if your whole goal in life is power, prestige, and money, and that's all you're considering, that's not a good thing. And so fundamentally, I think that sort of betrayed the her attitude and the whole feminist attitude and like leftist in general, right? Generally speaking, most of them are quite incompetent and lazy, right? Why do you think they want like welfare and all that kind of stuff? But they're basically – they're greedy. They're, you know what I mean? They're basically motivated by greed and lust for power, prestige, and money. I mean, she said it directly in her book. That's what it, you know, that's her big motivation there. And it's like, you know, if you look at all the old spiritual teachings, you know, what does the Bible say? You know, the meek inherits the earth, right? So we can say that a lot of leftists are motivated by greed for things they don't feel they or can't produce themselves.
Yeah, that's an interesting interesting thought. You know, I watched YouTube the other day. There was the the International Day of the Girl. I think that was a few days ago now, a couple of days ago. And
I try to not pay attention.
Yeah.
If I paid attention to every crazy thing leftists did, I think I'd shoot myself.
But it's funny though. It's really funny. It's entertaining. You know, you have to filter it in the right way. I'm looking for the video right now. I'll see if I can pull it up here. It was YouTube, as usual. You know, they have one of their campaigns and everything. But one of the main kind of arguments in this video was there's 130 million girls in the world without access. Is the word they use? Important word. Access to schools and education, right? So they were basically seeking shekels, you know, raise the money so that we can, like, you know, YouTube wanted to produce the longest film in the world by having multiple people count from one. I'm serious now. Count from one up to 130 million. So they're encouraging one person to record them saying a number, picking one of these numbers between one and 130 million. And then they're going to cut this together and hand over this film to the UN as a campaign to have them give money basically to I don't know, build schools in third world countries or something like that. But it's funny that they never bring up this aspect that, like, you know, from the beginning, those who invented the school system, Westerners, Europeans, they were not given access to schools. They invented the system themselves and built schools. And no one is ever asking themselves, why is it that these both fathers in these other world, in these other parts of the world too, but why is it that their societies overall cannot provide schooling for these girls? Why don't they build it? It's just not something you get, right? It's something you do. You work for it and you make sure, you know, that you build it and provide it to these girls. No one ever asked this question.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good point. You know, I mean, ultimately, there should be more self-determination. And there is, for whatever reason, a strong Western impulse to go and save the less fortunate. You know, it's kind of a patronizing thing, these leftists. Now, they call me racist because I'm like, yeah, they're probably not going to be able to do it. But, you know, it's still, you know, I view it as still up to them. You know, they want to do it, they don't want to do it, whatever, that's, you know, for them to choose. But these guys, they've got this patronizing attitude because at some fundamental level, they must recognize that, yeah, these people can't do it. And, you know, they won't say it in so many words, but, you know, the fact that they're going and doing this kind of demonstrates that they at some level they are accepting the fact that these people can't do it.
Yeah.
So you know, leftists are the real races.
exactly.
Not that I resort to that argument, but I mean no. It is kind of. But I would say it is patronizing to think, oh, well, these people need me to go and help them.
Yeah, I know. No, yeah.
They don't need you to go to help them, and if you know everybody needs. And as much as they can to help themselves. If you want to help somebody, go and help your neighbor that's right there. You know, go and help somebody in your city that you can actually talk to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not against, you know, helping people. That's not what I'm trying to argue. I think one of the traits of our charitable traits and our willingness to help other people is rooted in something very good, obviously. But it's this idea that it's basically, you know, money at the end of the day. It's drives to squeeze more money out of the West, which is already suffering very hard, to be honest. And we don't take care of our own anymore. We just, you know, all these other people around the world just have a right to something which we fought very, very hard for to come up with ourselves, right? So listen to this here. I found the video here. It's 2 minutes long. Listen to this here.
130 million girls didn't go to school today. Not because they didn't want to, but because they weren't given the chance. It's time to bring this problem to life. It's time to remind the world that behind this number, there are real girls with hopes and dreams just like mine. So, to show they all count, we're going to count them out loud, one by one.
Number one.
Two.
Three.
Four.
Five.
Six.
Seven.
Eight.
Nine.
Ten.
11.
Yeah, so as in text, we'll combine all these numbers and hand them over to the EU to the UN in February 2018, so that their voices can be heard.
Every number we count tells our politicians that we want to get these girls into school.
22.
8,900.
14,044.
16,016.
678,000.
Every number we count is a girl who could become a teacher, a doctor, a president.
2,819.
86,005.
170,564.
21,014. 38,210.
Everyone, every single person on the planet
has the right to go to school.
8,763.
50,000.
70,000.
95,000.
900,000.
Every number is a girl who deserves an education.
1,014,000.
4.5 million.
6 million.
7 million. 3
million.
130 million girls.
And every girl counts.
Anyway, it goes on from there. But it's just, it's funny to me, you know, that it's like, that's how they view it. It's just access and rights, and somewhere there is this machine, this magical entity that just, you know, it plops out schools and educational programs and stuff like that. I mean, let's face it, these were men that developed societies primarily that offered these things, right? I mean, it's just a fact. And then it's like, what about the boys then? Why is it just that all the girls count? What about all the boys out there that don't have education? Is that equality?
Yeah, it's a pretty much probably a 50-50 split. If there's not a school in some particular location, it's probably about the same number of boys and girls in that location who don't have a school.
Yeah,
you know what exactly. I mean? It's just, that's just, you know, that's the ratio of male to female when things are done. One thing I will point out, though, the education system has been completely corrupted and perverted into teaching this progressive ideology. And, it's not actually that beneficial to send that corrupt ideology, which will obviously go, if it goes through this program, then that we're going to be exporting that progressivism. We're going to be exporting this toxic culture.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a very toxic culture. So even if we do build those schools, I love the idea of people knowing the truth and how things are and being able to work with knowledge. I love that. But we cannot deny that, unfortunately, the education system that we've set up has been completely infiltrated and compromised by a very toxic culture and belief system. And so sending these schools isn't going to be, you know, I mean, maybe they'll learn some math and stuff they wouldn't learn otherwise, which would be useful. But honestly, I would say it was almost more harmful than beneficial, because you're going to get all that feminist nonsense in there too. Feminist universalism, you know.
Absolutely.
This untrue egalitarianism, resentment, victim cultures. That's just what we need. Feminists and leftists setting up schools in Africa, teaching them to hate white people.
But that's it. And
you know
that's,
what I mean?
That's good observation.
Exactly what would happen.
No, that's right. And that's a good observation. Another one of these videos, I think it was primarily in text, so I can't play it, but it said that they, I mean, when you read the text, it was like, oh, I get it now. They see these girls as soldiers in the war on men and probably the West at the end of it too, because it was like, it was about giving them the tools that they could to study what they want, but it said so that they could voice their concerns and their opinions, and basically, you know, they showed a megaphone and these girls like screaming into it and stuff like that, basically saying exactly what you said, like, yes, because they will be representatives of these, you know, progressive values, and they see that there would be a 130 million strong army in the war that they could utilize if they pull this off. So you're absolutely right. I think that's the goal.
Right. And well, whenever you see feminism, you know, all these things, even though they're not, they don't technically have to be related to each other. Like, for example, being an atheist has nothing to do with supporting gay rights. But find me an atheist who isn't a full gay rights supporter, right? There's not too many of them. For whatever reason, all these different, in theory, brands of, and by the way, I'm not really for gay rights, or certainly not marriage. I don't hate them or anything, but you can find the occasional atheist who isn't, But it's actually quite rare. But all these things come together, and they don't necessarily have to be. So when you see feminism, you're going to expect all the other things that come with leftism as well, and that includes, you know, race victimhood culture. That includes, you know, socialism and centralized state control and high taxes. All these things are going to go together with feminism. Now, you could want equal rights for women and have and be a libertarian sort of, you know, or at least be for low taxes and small government. In theory, you could. But in practice, you never see that, right? All these things go together. So if they're going to go start these feminist schools, all the other bullshit's going to be there too.
Here's the video. I found it. It's quick, but it's just music. So let me read you the text instead. It said, girls just want to have fundamental rights to education so they can grow their minds, break through glass ceilings, and learn about biology, music, history, and themselves. Education is about exploring the things that interest them and debating the things that outrage them so that they can become whatever they damn well please. To a girl, school is more than just books. It's earning her own money, and here it comes, and marrying when she's ready. It's independence, freedom, and power. If you educate a girl, you educate the world. So what are you waiting for? Take action today. So, you know, it's like, and that explains it. This is this one campaign that they did together with YouTube. And it's all about, you know, making them into these political pawns in the game. And it's very transparent, frankly. Well,
yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked about the nonsense of the glass ceiling. I mean, the whole point of my book was to explain why the glass ceiling is not what they think it is. It's purely biologically based. But I want to point out some of the things that you know, some of the key words there, like damn well please. Do whatever they want. There's a lot of anger in that, right?
Of course.
And then there's the talk about power. We're going to get power.
That's right.
And it's like, I don't know, you know, why don't, instead of wanting power and being angry, and this goes for men and women, this is not a gender, you know, why don't you think about having a happy life? Where you can, you know, you don't need to like have power over others. You don't have to control what they're doing. Why don't you think about, you know, having your own happiness, right?
Yeah.
And that's another key word is like they can marry whenever they want. So you want them to join, you know, hop on the cock carousel, spend their whole 20s being sluts, and then they're washed up and completely psychologically messed up from being pumped and dumped a million times. Then they're, you know, completely not suitable for wife material anymore.
Yeah.
And so you're trying, I mean, they're ruining these girls' lives. And I mean, they present it in a way like, yeah, this is cool for you. You're gonna get to take advantage of that anger you have and stick it to them. And then you're gonna get power. And then you're gonna get to do whatever you want. And in reality, they're ruining their lives, and they're gonna be miserable, and they're gonna end up, you know, lots of women are ended up, you know, bitter cat lady spinsters.
Yeah.
Nowadays. Yeah. I mean, and you know, being alone for guy doesn't really bother them as much. I mean, yeah, it's not ideal, but it's not the same level of psychological damage it is for a woman. I mean, I don't know. You can go and see some of those cases, these cat ladies and hoarders and that kind of stuff. And there's just something about that female psychology that it does not handle loneliness all that well.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be okay when they're like, you know, in their 20s and 30s and maybe even 40s. But then later on in life, that's a very, very sad thing. And again, we're back to that situation we mentioned before that you talked about, that on some level, you know, indoctrinating these girls with this line of thinking should be seen as abuse to a certain level, because it's programming them and equipping them to take a certain path in life, while the progressive elites, probably not the elites, but while the progressive, you know, pushers, the lower levels, probably think that this is about not giving them you know, kind of a path in life, but letting them explore and do whatever they want to do. And let's not impose any of these, you know, evil gender roles on these women or whatever. But the fact is, they are leading them down a completely different path, which has been, which is unnatural compared to how women have been living for millions of years before this progressive insanity set into the world. And I think that it's causing, and we know this, studies have been done. There are more, you know, most women are, they're more depressed than ever, feel more isolated than ever. It doesn't matter that they make more money and all this stuff, because that's not what it's about. It's not about those issues. It's about the connections, and it's about family, and it's about belonging, you know?
Yeah, I just had a perverse thought. What, you know, since these progressive ideologies are so damaging to Western population, you know, demographic growth, like, if you could actually send it to Africa, would it help reduce their birth rate? Because
possibly.
They do have an excessively high birth rate. So yeah. maybe they aren't that bad after all.
Well, maybe it's the nefarious Bill Gates that that's why he wants to send schools and education to Africa, right?
Yeah. We need to build schools in Africa so we can stop their women from having so many damn babies.
You know what? We should start advocating for this then. Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah,
maybe, like, let's do it.
Maybe Africa really needs some more progressivism after
yeah,
all.
Yeah, exactly. No, but isn't there some, I think there's something to that though, that most people, and this includes, I believe, immigrant that comes to the West, maybe not first generation, but second and third, they usually adopt kind of the same methods that people in the West do. They have one, maybe two children, smaller families, they do become more materialistic and stuff like that. So there is something to, you know, to say about this, that it tends, it's something with the material lifestyle, the Western lifestyle, that is less focused on family. And it just seems to be the fact, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is education. You know, you keep people in education until their mid to late 20s. And, you know, if you're busy, you don't have a real job, and you're taking out all these loans, I mean, you can't afford to, you know, get a house or a habitation and raise a family. I mean, it costs money. And it's, from what I understand, it's far more expensive now than it was, you know, 50 years ago. And it's like, well, why is it so much more expensive now? You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, property prices and food prices and all these diaper products. I guess they used to use cloth diapers versus now we just create these huge landfills with these disposable diapers. I mean, but there's all sorts of reasons that, you know, it's a lot more expensive now than it used to be. And it's like, well, how is it that our ancestors with far less were able to do this so reasonably well,
yeah,
while now it's like most people find it impossible?
Yeah.
Right.
Good point.
And so what has happened? What has happened to our society that has made this the case? And can we do something about it?
Do you have any ideas, any proposals?
Well, I think, for the most part, the universities are bloated and useless, and that credentialism is useless. What would be far better is if companies were just allowed to give a 2-hour IQ test and be like, okay, that guy's smart, so we're going to undertake it to train him to do what we want. And it would be better than going and learning all this extraneous stuff. You know, if you want to be an engineer, chemical engineer, like, you really, there's a lot of classes, well, any major really, there's a lot of classes that you really don't need to do what you want to do. So that's just extra time you have to be there. That's just extra money you have to spend on things you don't need and aren't helpful. A well-rounded education to me is, how can we justify charging you all, you know, thousands of dollars to keep, you know, because we're going to keep you a couple of years to take all this crap you don't need. Right, that's what I hear when I hear well-rounded education.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If a person wants a well-rounded education, they can go on the computer and learn about whatever they want to learn about. Right, if you're going to go build oil rigs, like, the only classes you need aren't how to build an oil rig. Right, so that's sort of my opinion. So I think getting rid of the university system as they currently exist would go a long way in helping, right? I'm not saying get rid of, learning or specializing or getting these technical or otherwise skills, but the current system just needs to be gotten rid of. And once you got rid of that system, then this fake path that they're offering to women. I mean, like, the whole figure about 62% of women or, 60% or so of college graduates are women now or attendees or something like that. It's just nonsense. All those women are getting these stupid degrees in, like, psychology or sociology or, underwater basket weaving. So the fact that they're making up a percentage – well, they're making a percentage by learning useless things and wasting their time and basically, taking easy classes and then just going and drinking and riding the cock carousel. That's what they're doing. Mm. That's what they're really doing. It isn't impressive. I mean, they post these numbers up like, oh, look, it's not impressive. It isn't at all. And I detailed this too. I showed, I looked at some of the evidence of what kind of majors they were actually taking. And it's not impressive in the least. I mean, it's sad because they're getting huge. I mean, and that's another thing about women. They don't think nearly as critically as men do. I mean, yeah, men make mistakes as well, but it's not nearly at the same rate as women, which is why you have 62% of college attendees are women, because they don't think as critically. So they're getting these massive, massive loans and debt for things that aren't going to help them. I mean, even, it's not even things that could get them a lucrative career, even if that's what they wanted to do, even though that's a bad idea anyway. But even if that's what they wanted to do, they're not even doing that right by getting a degree in psychology.
Interesting. So before we get too far into some of these other aspects here, what else of Cordelia Fine's work, if there's anything left, should we talk about? I don't know if there's any final couple of points you wanted to mention here before we start wrapping up in a while here.
Well, okay, so her main beef is with evolutionary psychologists and economists. She made, especially for the first group, straw men. It was a straw man argument. She either willfully did not disclose what evolutionary psychologists actually say, or she doesn't know. I'm not sure which. Economists, she points out all these really dumb studies that economists have done. I think she's correct. But it seems like a fight between two bad sciences. Well, it's social science, so it's kind of one. It's bad science fighting other bad science. I'm not really too worried about economists. She doesn't mention IQ differences at all, which is a big red flag if you want to think about why men and women have different rates of success in certain fields. So one of the things she said, I guess I didn't mention, is she said the brains were different. We talked about the compensation thing, right? But as I mentioned in my book, the male brain is on average 8 to 10% larger than the female brain. And the neuronal density, the amount of neurons per given, area or volume, is also substantially higher in men as well. It's like, well, how are women going to compensate for having a smaller brain with less cells per unit volume? Like, how is that even possible to compensate for that? You know what I mean? So that was another thing. It's like, maybe there is compensation in some way, but I don't think that's one, how does a smaller brain with less neurons compensate? It's into my mind, not possible. We talked about the risk-taking, the financial crisis. I guess the last thing I'd like to say is that in general, she minimizes or glosses over well-established, biologically known things. I mean, we've been studying gender for a long time, and we've been studying testosterone for a long time. And if you remove the SRY gene, I remember there's one section where she was criticizing the SRY gene, which is basically, it's the male determining factor. It's on the Y chromosome. It sort of triggers all the things that leads to gonad formation, which then starts pumping out testosterone and other hormones. And she was basically making it out like, oh, that's not as big a deal as it is. Well, no, it is an extremely big deal. If you take that out, you can't develop as male. You can't do it. So I thought that was just sort of insane.
Is it, isn't that reflective of them, kind of their hatred and their what's the word? Well, hatred really of the male, right? So they see that. I think that these people, if they could, they would go in genetically and, like, you know, destroy the ability for the development of males early on in the process. Just like those women would want to change things on the playground for boys, they will try to find the root cause of the issue, which is males, it's testosterone. So let's just go in biologically, genetically, and destroy those aspects that develop males, right?
Well, I'm not sure if she was saying it right then and there. She was saying more that it wasn't as big of a deal as it is, and which she's wrong, and it kind of goes against, you know, many, many years of biology research. But that does remind me of a story that she kind of begins her book, and she says these things that she wants to say, and then she backpedals. But I think she says the things that she's sincere about, and then she insincerely, you know, sort of pretends like, oh, haha, I didn't mean that. And one of the things, she begins her book, she's talking about the dog. She's had a dog and was getting it neutered. And she claims that her son.
God.
Oh, yeah. And she mentioned some things about her son, too. And I was just like, ah, that poor kid.
Jeez.
You know, she had to go get this dog neutered. And she told her son about it. And he's a young kid. He's like, oh, yeah, you should get it and put it on a keychain. She said that he was really interested in taxidermy for some reason, because young kids are really interested in taxidermy, apparently. Jeez. Or hers is. And so she's like, well, that would fit the stereotype of the angry feminist with the, you know, having some testicles on a keychain, dirt, 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 dirt. And so she tells this story, which is kind of obnoxious. And you can imagine all these, like, angry Butch Dyke feminist readings going, yeah, yeah, fuck those guys. And you kind of imagine all these ugly women, fat women doing that. And but then she immediately, you know, to give him that little juice, like, oh, really? I don't mean that. Oh,
God,
I don't.
Stupid.
I don't. You know. And so she does that a lot. She'll say things, and then she'll backpedal. She'll say things that's like kind of proves that she's like this retarded, you know, if not angry feminist herself, then at least pandering to the angry feminists. But then she'll kind of backpedal on and be like, oh, well, you know, moderate it a little bit. But she kind of has that sort of that writing style. And it's just like, you know, there's like a lack of sincerity there. You know, when I wrote my book, I told you exactly what I thought. And I didn't try to, like, gloss it over or anything, but when she writes it, she tells you what she thinks, and then she tries to pretend like, oh, well, I didn't really mean it like I said it.
And it's just science, anyway, at the end.
And it's insincere. She's insincere. And I don't know if it's just – and again, I'm not sure if she's just really as dumb as my impression is, or if she's, like, deliberately manipulative. Or, you know, insincere or whatever. I'm just not sure.
Very odd. It's a very odd, you know, case, if you will. But it's not surprising. I'm not surprised. I think we'll see more of this kind of stuff out of the likes of royal societies. And, you know, we know even about the Nobel Prize, the Peace Prize, the sciences and stuff, which is just like the whole field, the whole official academic field is turning into a didactic political tool that's being used by leftists and progressives now, and that's always what it's been. So people should be wary of what people call science, of what people say, you know, is the truth, because they've scientifically come to those conclusions. We should be very skeptical of that, and we need to look at things again and again. We need to re-examine, and we need to know that they're using science now as a tool, because it seemingly is this kind of, you know, magic bullet. It's like an impenetrable, you know, shield that they have set up that always will just give you the raw truth. But as we know, it's interpretive, it's selective, and we should not think of it, their science, as this kind of, you know, ultimate way for us to know. I mean, you saw what happened with Bill Nye, for example. The same thing there. Remember the show a couple of months ago?
Oh, yeah, with the was like transgender type crap, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the I forget what the name was, but the songs and the, you know, same thing there. They're pushing the same bullshit over and over again about transgenderism, feminism.
Leftists have been doing this for a very long time. There's actually a term for it. It's called Lysenkoism. And I highly suggest anyone who doesn't know what Lysenkoism, please look it up, because this was something under, I believe, Stalin. And basically, they didn't like Mendelian genetics, which is the, you know, it's the real genetics, the one that we're using in the West. And they believed in Lamarckian stuff. And basically, the Lamarckian view, you know, Lamarck was a smart guy. He came up with taxonomy, but he didn't know natural selection. So he came up with an idea that, you know, acquired characteristics of an adult animal could be passed on to the offspring. Which we know now is not the case. I mean, well, there is epigenetics, but that's not really what Lamarck was saying. It's like, if you had to reach really far, then you could, your arm could grow a little bit longer, and you could pass on that longer arm to your offspring, and that was kind of his thing. And it's not how genetics actually works. But the under the Stalin regime, he put this into their agricultural research, and like anybody who tried to go against him got sent to the damn gulag.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely do not mistake these leftists that
they
are doing
will
it
do
now,
that. They will do that
they
again.
They will send us to the gulag.
That's
if
correct.
They get the opportunity.
Yep.
And they're just itching for it. You see Antifa out on the streets, they would love to have a revolution, put in a radical leftist government, and send all of us to the gulag.
That's right.
I mean, this is how these people operate, and they've been operating this way for at least 100 years, if not longer. So keep that in mind, you know.
Yes, this mass murder at the end of this thing. If they can have their way, they're trying now, pushing with human rights and equality, and you know, gender equality, and all these things. And they're trying to change our culture, to try and to change our relation to science. But as you say, at the end of this, that's so that they can get the right people in place and have an army of indoctrinated, you know, kids at their disposal, basically. But when they have that, it'll be to the gulags with those that disagree with them, no doubt.
Well, think about it this way. These were agricultural scientists working with, like, wheat and rye. And they didn't like their opinions about how wheat and rye would evolve, so they sent them to a gulag over wheat and rye. And,
yeah. Yep.
I mean, think about it. If, you know, it doesn't matter. They're going to get their hair up their ass about something, right? And it could be wheat or rye, or it could be transgenderism, or it, you know, they haven't started it yet, but I'm sure bestiality's down the pipe somewhere. You know, they're going to get a hair up their ass about it. And if you don't agree that bestiality is the best thing since sliced bread, they're going to send you to the gulag if they get power.
Yep, pedophilia.
Which is why they,
you know,
absolutely cannot be allowed to ever get even a shred of power.
That's correct.
They already have a lot now. But that, you know, not only can they not be allowed to get more, but they need to start being removed from every institution where they do have power. And
that's
the companies, these big companies and government institutions, I mean, I don't know, they something needs to be done about it. They need to be, I don't know,
purged.
I'll leave it up to the insightful listener to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but it's true. I mean, it's they will stop at nothing, and keep that in mind. At the end of this, it's mass murder. That's what they've done in the past. Communism. I mean, I know it's not flat out communism that we have today. It's transmorphed and changed and stuff like that. But you know, frankly, many of them admiration of that today. Exactly, it's a descendant. It's a close relative. It has some, you know, to a certain extent, some of the communist ideas are a little bit too conservative even for them. You know, they have a whole new flavor of this, you know, the gender stuff and all those kinds of things. But yeah, no, this
Stalin
is,
was an asshole, but he was a manly dude, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
He was ruthless. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know how he'd feel about all this transgender stuff. Something tells me he wouldn't like it.
Yeah, that's right. This is the greatest mass murdering ideology in the history of mankind. It's just a fact. That's what it is.
Yep.
So we need to watch out. You're absolutely right, Broderick. You know, but tell us a little bit more about your book, then, so people want to read more about, you know, your perspective on this and get the truth about gender and sex differences and all that kind of stuff. Where do they go to pick up a copy of your book?
Well, my book's name is Smart and Sexy by Roderick Kane. It explains what the intelligence differences are between men and women and explains the biology which causes those differences to come about. You can find the book on Amazon. You can also go to my website, atavisionary.com, and I have it linked on the sidebar there. I also write articles fairly, somewhat regularly, not just on gender differences, intelligence, on a lot of topics, alt-right and neo-reactionary type of content. So if you'd like that, yeah, check it out. I also have a subreddit called R Dark Enlightenment, which a lot of different alt-right and that kind of stuff posts get made, and we have discussions there.
Awesome. That's great. Let me just read you guys quickly. Smart and Sexy is the definitive book on sex differences in intelligence. With over 300 citations of peer-reviewed scientific articles, it describes the latest science on cognitive differences in the sexes without being hampered by political correctness or feminism. So that's that's the book in a nutshell. And of course, that's much of what we've been talking about today. We didn't really get into the political correct stuff, but this is how feminism has ended up dominating the narrative, basically. And we need books like Roderick's to counter this and to come in with the real science and to show why these other people are nutballs and they have it wrong. So thank you for your work, Roderick. We'll have links up on Red Ice, of course, to the book and also to the website atavisionary.com. We'll add a link to the subreddit as well. But thank you for coming on, Roderick. Please stay in touch. Keep up the good work, and let's do it again in the future.
Yeah, hey, I love being on. It was great talking to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening today. Always a pleasure having you with us. I hope you enjoyed the show today and that you found it interesting and, of course, that you've learned something new. We are going to pick up and continue here tomorrow, Saturday the 14th. We have a live stream for you out of Holland. The Erkenbrand guys are putting on a conference. We're going to bring that to you live. Speakers there, we have Jared Taylor, Millennial Woes, Guillaume Durocher, Robert Stuckers, and there might be others. So we're going to kick off at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is 2 p.m. Central European Time, and it's an all-day event, so definitely make sure that you tune into that. We also have a new bunch of videos coming out here in the next couple of days. Lana has a new one. We are going to record on a few different topics that have popped up, and then we have a Weekend Warrior we're going to bring to you as well as soon as possible. Thank you to everyone for staying with us. Thank you for your patience. If you're a member, sustaining your membership until we have the members' website up, we're still working on that and bring that to you as soon as we possibly can. In the meantime, we do accept donations. If there's anyone that want to help us out, please go to paypal.me/redice. That really helps us keep afloat in the interim here until everything is up and running again. So thank you guys. Have a good rest of your day or evening, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.